Welcome to the Just Fly Performance Podcast, episode 29. Today on the show, we have John Hines, owner of Monkey Bar Gym and inventor of the Power Jumper by Lifeline USA. Today's episode is brought to you by Simply Faster. Simply Faster is an online athletic performance technology shop distributing items such as the Freelap Timing System, GymAware, K-Box, 1080 Sprint, and the Speedmat. I've gotten many of these items from Simply Faster and can confidently say that they make today's best training technology available to everybody. The Freelap Timing System has revolutionized both my practices and my athlete assessments, allowing me to look at the 10-meter fly capability of dozens of athletes in a matter of seconds. It is wireless, compact, portable, and incredibly versatile. The K-Box and 1080 Sprint are fantastic tools for any coach looking to build speed, agility, and implement training scenarios that go beyond the traditional weight room. The 1080 Sprint is being used by great coaches training some of the fastest sprinters in the world, and it truly represents high-performance speed training. I can personally attest that Simply Faster's customer service is second to none. Christopher at Simply Faster responds quickly to queries, and anyone who makes a purchase from Simply Faster is in good hands. If you want to acquire some of the best high-tech training equipment available, stop by simplyfaster.com. That's simply with an I, faster.com. They are the future of coaching technology. Welcome to the Just Fly Performance Podcast. Thanks for being with us today. I'm your host, Joel Smith, and this is episode 29. We have John Hines on the show today. He is the owner of the Monkey Bar Gym chain. He also invented the Power Jumper distributed by Lifeline, which has become a favorite of a lot of people and trainers for building two-footed jumping ability in athletes. John also talks about some things that he's done for one-legged jumpers. But as I've talked about in the past a little bit in the recent episodes, one of the things Just Fly Sports is known for is vertical jumping. And so I really was excited to get John because he's been doing this for a while. He's been an in-the-trenches guy, both in his own training and training others. He's gotten great results with a lot of athletes and compared things like the Power Jumper to just using static weight belts. And he gets the results using primarily the Power Jumper, by the way. He's not a big one rep max guy. He's going to get into that in his program a little bit. And it's simple stuff, but it's really effective stuff. And it's just great to hear that reiterated sometimes when we tend to look at all the complexities and all the possibilities of training. So that's just a great piece on the show today. I think it also has great implications, or what John talks about, how he uses the Power Jumper, and is just the way that the human body learns, motor learning, and how do we adapt to our environmental constraints. And if you have a band pulling you down and you're downwards towards gravity in your specific sport movement, how does that cause your brain to react and adapt? And it's just a fascinating area. This episode is just loaded with practical stuff, and I think it was a fun one to record. John's a fun guy to talk to, and just a good dude. And I'm excited to bring what he has to offer to the show today. So let's get to it. All right, John, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate having you here.
Thanks, Joel. It's nice to be here. Look forward to talking.
Awesome, man. So could you just start off with sharing with all of us a little bit about your background as a coach and trainer, and what's your background in jump training?
My background in training, I've been honestly training as similar things as a strength coach since I was about 6 years old. My dad, Bobby Hines, invented a beaded jump rope when I was six, and surgical tubing to resist running and assist running. And he thought, why not make it into an exercise, portable exercise gym? So he did that early on. And because of that, I got to see a lot of Olympic athletes, professional athletes, tether themselves to my dad's cables, and they would do various jumping and sprint drills. And so I started doing stuff like that from an early age. And like yourself, Joel, I was obsessed with jumping high and running faster. And so when I saw these Olympic level athletes using this equipment and it was improving their speed, I got really obsessed with, okay, how do I do it? How do I tether myself to tables and run against it, or do skating movements like Eric Heiden did? He was a speed skater from Wisconsin that won like six or seven gold medals, and he world records in each one, and And then that just became an obsession. And as I grew, I just sort of tried to figure it out on my own. But then when I got into college is when I really started delving deep into Russian plyometric books. And that sprung my vertical up from like 25 inches to about 47 inches within a little over 2 years. And for somebody that's obsessed with wanting to dunk, going from touching the backboard to hitting your head on the rim in 2 years was amazing. And that's what really got me interested in it as far as sports-specific training to improve my speed and jumping. But then when I was a sophomore, I believe, one of my friends from New York told me, man, you should be a personal trainer. That there was no such thing at that time. We're talking about 1983 or 4. There was no such thing as personal training or even a strength coach, for that matter, really. So I said, yeah, that sounds cool. To work people out and they pay me to do that? Yeah, I could do that. So I started doing that with friends and stuff like that. And so then people started talking, and I started doing it on a regular basis my junior and senior year in college. And then another guy said, man, you should move to LA. That's where personal training just started, and it's big. And so I moved out there. Within 6 months, I got the job with the LA Clippers as a strength coach. I was training tons of celebrities and tons of pro baseball and basketball players. And that's pretty much my story in a nutshell. It's just a huge fascination with it. And I got fortunate enough to get in the business early and got to meet a lot of really amazing people because of that.
That's great. It's always really impressive to hear of people who are doing this like back when it wasn't really a field. And I always think it's just so cool to make that jump before this is like a real, you know, an established profession and doing all that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I was a strength coach with the Clippers, there was only one, and he was a strength coach for the Warriors. And so that was him and I were the only strength coaches in the NBA at that time, I believe. And he didn't need any requirements other than I had trained a bunch of pro athletes in LA, and I was just lucky. You know, I got National Strength and Conditioning Association. I went through their course, but I didn't have a master's degree in it or anything like that. I just had tons of experience because I had actually started training athletes when I was 16 years old, teaching them how to do jump training like I was doing in speed training with the cables.
So. Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing. Like in one of the other podcasts that I was doing, we were talking about how in some cases you need a master's degree now just to get an internship in the field.
Yeah.
And things were probably a lot different back then.
It is a lot different. The things, when I look back at what I would do with the players then, is just like, oh my God, I would have them do all these really hardcore drills. They wouldn't be fully warmed up sometimes, and fortunately nothing ever happened. But the stuff that I did, the good things, like I did a lot of alignment work, a lot of one-legged balance work. I did a ton of that, and that helped me a lot, really prep the athletes for their games. And like when I was my first year and my second year, we had zero ankle or knee injuries. And there's two players that got injured, and they were the only two guys that would not work out. And so we had a really great record of no injuries and high performance. And that's all that a strength coach needs to be doing anyway. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great. I think a lot of people in the pro world would probably be in a similar mind today. Yes, working on alignment, reducing injuries, and sounds like you were doing some great things back then.
You're listening to the Just Fly Performance Podcast, brought to you by Simply Faster.
How would you describe, and this is probably a little bit of a big question, but
How would you describe your approach to training athletes for speed and power? I know that I've heard that your approach is maybe more movement oriented, not as much weightlifting. What would you say right. that your approach is there?
Well, I look at everything as far as technique is king, and you have to have your technique perfect. It's sort of like you were a high jumper. You're not, I don't care how much pop, you have, if you have crappy technique. So I always looked at perfect their technique and then lightly resist it. And I found that by doing that, because I looked at sprinters, and for sure, do you need hip extension strength, and do you need explosive legs, and you need strength, as a foundation? For sure, that is huge. But a lot of strength coaches, I feel, look at, you got to have heavy deadlift, you got to have heavy cleans, and that's it. And they look at that as the whole thing. And I just always looked at, well, look at what Jesse Owens did. Look at what people did back then. What did they do to get faster? They ran. And they might have ran a slight uphill. They might have ran a slight downhill to work over speed and under and over speed training and then do slightly resisted training. And that's what they did. You don't want to interfere with the technique by loading it too much. And if you stay within those parameters, you improve speed. So all I did was I looked at jump training the exact same way. Perfect their technique, make sure their alignment is sound with that technique, and then get it to full speed. And once they got that, then I'm going to slightly resist it. And because I used myself as a guinea pig, and my results were off the charts. I mean, I damn near doubled my vertical jump. I mean, my vertical jump was okay, 25 inches, 26 inches around there, but getting it up to 47 inches is sort of ridiculous. And I met nobody else that did that. So I was like, well, I think this works. And so I started to apply it to other people, and they started getting similar results. And over a 10-week period, with athletes that I worked with, they would average, now this is average, 8-inch vertical jump improvement and 10 inches on broad jump improvement. And that's without doing heavy squats and heavy cleans as the main focal point. We would do that stuff sometimes, but it was not the main focal point of their jump training and speed training. And so that is not really how most people do it. But I'll put my results against any strength coach out there. You would be hard-pressed to find somebody that gets higher averages than that. And that's still my average for all my athletes I've trained over the last, 25-some years of just jump training.
Yeah. I love that, the tension of balance there. And I do think that the world of performance training certainly has been through a phase of just hit this lift, just hit this percentage of your body weight.
Yeah, exactly.
So
here's a perfect example. I actually had a friend of mine. He's a well-known strength coach, and I respect his opinion on that. He's a very good strength coach, but I look at things differently than he does. He and I were sitting down for dinner one night, and we were talking, just like you and I are, and he goes, John, I still can't. I have a hard time seeing how you train your athletes for jump training. He goes, so you mean to tell me that you feel okay if you're training an NFL cornerback and they can't double body weight squat and they got to cover a guy like Reggie Bush out of the backfield? You feel comfortable if they can't do that? And I was like, I don't give a damn if they can't do that. What I'm nervous about, if I have to cover Reggie Bush, am I as fast as he is? Can I outjump him? Can I outrun him? That's what I'm more concerned. I don't give a damn about the deadlift or back squat or anything. I care, can I jump with him? Can I run with him? And if I got those covered, who cares how I got there? So if my way to get there works, and I got a bigger vertical jump than him, and I can run a little bit faster than him, then why would you care if I can double back, squat, or whatever? And he had to agree. I was like, because it makes no difference that the squatting and all that stuff is irrelevant. Why do you squat? Why do you do heavy cleans? Your objective is to run faster and jump higher. So my objective on the field is not what is my squat and what is my clean. My objective is what's my vertical, what's my speed. So that is what I focus on purely, not a lift.
Yeah, it's all about that dynamic transfer.
Yep. And as long as if you're aware of technique one, and then how to get them to do that technique with really great alignment, then it's just a simple case of slowly increasing the speed to its full speed and then slowly adding load to it.
Yeah, I think it's very similar to what I believe Nick Winkelman says. Like, you build the pattern, the position, and then the power comes last. So would you say, in terms of expanding too on your approach to training athletes, let's just say for vertical jump, when you're doing that light resistance overload, are you using like a power jumper with one band initially or very light? And what types of plyometrics are you looking at in a progression there?
Well, I use my power jumper because I invented it just specifically to do two-legged vertical jumps, not from the stance, but you can do it from an approach jump and also broad jumps. And then I also got, I developed with a friend of mine, Castle Huffman, a tool called a C-band. And a C-band is perfect to resist one-legged jumps, which for high jumpers and long jumpers and triple jumpers and one-legged dunkers or jumpers, the C-band works perfect. So what I would do is I do a set where the load might be around 30% resistance, so it's slightly heavy on your first set, and then the second set, the load would be lightened but to about 15% load, and then the last set, you have no load. So the last set, you feel like you're basically being shot out of a cannon because you have no resistance, and your technique is sound, and you're just popping like crazy off two or one leg. And I tried to disprove my own theory one summer, and I used weight vest in place of the power jumper, and my average that summer, instead of 8 and 10 inch improvements on vert and broad jump, the improvements dropped down to 3 and 4 inches, which by most strength coach standards is good improvement, but for what I do, it I feel that would be a horrible improvement over a summer. And I, the only thing that I could think of as to why the cable works superior to dead weight was because of on the preload right before you jump on all of those, you might be getting more of a rebound effect using the, it's different. It's sort of weird. I guess the main thing is it's hard to overcome progressive variable resistance. Weight, you can create momentum with. Progressive variable resistance gets harder the more you stretch it. So maybe that was it, whereas you're getting to more extension on your jump, you're getting loaded slightly more. And with the dead weight, the weight stays the same, and you're creating more. You've got the momentum going. Now the weight just goes with you. And that's the only difference I can really see as to the cable versus weight, but the results were hugely different, and it made me go right back to using cables again the next off season.
Yeah, that is an interesting thought. Yeah, with cables versus weight vests. I know, and in terms of strength training work, I've always kind of been of the mind of not using heavy bands for barbell work, but lighter bands being okay, and then for jump training, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I really it's such it is an interesting thought. It's almost like, yeah, like the brain is forced to work harder throughout the to get to that end range of the movement. Well, it forces the brain to recruit more muscles.
That's the only thing that I have really, because I really tried to disprove, because I was always wondering, why does the vert improve so much with the cables? And then I would go and I would see other strength coaches, and I was like, how much do you guys improve over the summer? And they're like, we get some 3, sometimes 4 inches, and they're excited about it. And I'm looking at them like, God, I'd be embarrassed if I had that low of an improvement over the off season. And I was like, okay, I can't be doing, I mean, I'm doing different things, but damn, the bands. And you know how many jumps I do too? I do two days a week, and I only do about 30 jumps per workout, loaded.
Wow.
And that's it. And so my athletes, one of the things that is also a big deal is that most people do jump training, do hundreds of reps per workout, and I do about 30 to 40 reps per workout twice a week.
Yeah, that's efficient.
Yeah, it's very efficient. But one of my athletes know when you start jumping slower, you jump lower, and as soon as they hit a rep where they're not getting that pop anymore, the set is over. And they know that. I never have ever said we're doing sets of 8 and they start going slower at 6 and they keep going. I don't train that way. I don't believe in training that way.
You're listening to the Just Fly Performance Podcast, brought to you by Simply Faster.
Gotcha. So you would do, so with the power jumper on, with the banded jumps, you would do like a set of, you'd say like a set of 8, and then, but if they dropped off at 5 or 6, then you'd cut the set there at rest and until they were ready to go again.
Yeah, I don't even have to say anything. My athletes just know they stop. So for example, if you have the power jumper on and I have you doing approach jumps to the rim off 2 feet, and with 2 bands on, you're grabbing the rim. And you do that for 5 reps. And then on the 6th rep, you just barely touch the rim. Then you would just stop. You know I'm not eliciting the same power response. So, and if your recovery was long enough, you should have been able to reproduce it unless you're just done. So I don't want to train endurance, so we stop.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You're keeping the main thing, and you're not training athletes exactly to jump low. That's awesome. Do you do any, you mentioned you had delved into some Russian work. Do you do any plyometrics or depth jumps or anything alongside your power jumper work?
Well, my power jumper, all the drills are plyometrics. It's 100%. Things like depth jumps, no, I don't do those. I did those myself, and I found the results were not as good as doing my two-legged approach jumps, one-legged approach jumps, and broad jumps. Those reap the best results. It's not even close. Depth jumps, I found that the end doesn't justify the means. There's too much of a risk, because in all the research that I did with it, it's just, when you start getting, because the Russians started getting up to 3-foot depth jumps, then 5-foot depth jumps, and even jumping off of 8 feet, but if you read, what is it, Verchenko?
Verkashansky?
You super training book?
Yeah, Mel Siff and Yuri Verkashansky.
Yeah, Mel Siff. Yeah, I talked to Mel a couple, I used to talk to him all the time. And he really actually agreed with a lot of the ways that I was training, because I would listen and I would look at the Russians and Eastern Bloc research that they had, and they even said the risk, when you start getting over 3 feet, the risk dramatically goes up for injury. And one of my things that I also look at was, okay, why am I understand why I would jump off it, to really hyper load my system and get it adapted to that incredible load. But I'm not doing it in a way that is similar to how I jump. That's one of the big things, is that if you're doing high jumping, Joe, I'm going to load you exactly how you approach the bar and work you. And you can even jump off the one leg until you go hip to bar, like on your, maybe you work just hip to bar on all your drills. You don't literally go over the bar, but I would literally resist you as you're running up and doing your approach jump to the bar, where you might try and get your hip up to the bar, and that's how I would load you. You're loading exactly how you perform, and that's what I do with my basketball players.
Yeah, it's a good mentality to have, in keeping that technique the main thing. I also do think with the depth jumps, like especially for some athletes more so than others, the higher that box gets, the more they go into a excessive knee flexion. And some athletes certainly are, even the 3 foot box is a lot too much for a lot of athletes.
Yeah, it's just more dangerous than it's not worth it, I don't think.
Yeah. So in terms, you mentioned alignment a little bit before, John. What are some of your drills that, and exercises and your philosophy towards getting athletes in good alignment and just training them to move better?
Well, when I was going crazy dunking, I blew my left knee out. And at that time, I realized my body was messed up as far as alignment goes. And at that, I became one of the head instructors for the National Academy of Sports Medicine in January 1990. And when I started teaching functional stability training with them, and I started seeing, okay, I got misalignments, but one of the problems was, okay, well, now what? And nobody really knew much alignment training to rebalance the body. And so I went to soft tissue centers, I went to different people in LA, and like one neuromuscular therapist, he made me feel really great. He was top notch, but he was $150 for a half hour. And that, I'm talking about 1992.
Wow.
And this guy was charging that much. He was worth it though. He was amazing. Jonathan Switzer was his name. And, but I looked at it like, okay, well, that's nice if I have the money, but if I don't have the money, what am I going to do to get myself right? And I became very frustrated with the fitness industry, that it was all about pound and not about align. And one of my clients was Woody Harrelson at the time, and he did yoga. And I looked at it a little bit, but I really didn't appreciate it back then. And a lot of his yoga was static stretching, and which I still to this day don't agree with doing static stretching. So everything that I thought the body should do is active alignment. And I, of course, like most people, you wait until you're broken until you begin to heal things. And so fortunately in 97, I was just like, I'm done with LA. I felt like I had done what I need to do. I want to go invent some stuff. I moved back to Madison, but my body was jacked up. I was basically hobbling around from 94 through 97 on one leg, and I developed a really bad back issue. And when I got here, I met this guy named Roger Isons, and he taught me his alignment, active alignment training. And it improves nervous function, blood flow, and muscular balance. And it's all active movements. And it's none of it is static stretching, which fell right in line with how I believed that we should do things, because no species on the planet static stretches. So why do humans? And it just didn't make sense to me. And I saw, okay, so if this stuff gets me in better positioning, then I can jump better as well. And so I started doing his alignment training, and I got myself back on a jump training program again, and I got my vertical all the way back up so that I could hit my elbow on the rim again. And but this time I was doing it smart with alignment training, so that's what made me realize, damn, there's a lot to this, and that there's huge benefit. And most athletes, they just play like, and then their back just starts to hurt, and then what do? They get static stretch their hamstrings, they lay on heating pads like Larry Bird did all the time, and then sadly their career is over. But it's so not necessary. Athletes, you know, the active alignment stuff works like nothing I have ever seen in my life. And that's why it's the only thing that I still do this day that I've done the same over the last 20 years. And I can fix back pain, knee pain, hip, shoulder, neck pain. We fix that stuff here so fast. It's incredible. You can walk in using a walker and you're literally like 15, 20 minutes later, you walk out carrying a walker. It has, Roger, it blew my mind. Within 2 to 3 minutes, I was at a level 9 in pain. And within 2 to 3 minutes, my pain was like down to a 1 or a 2. And that allowed me within a month to go play basketball all day long again, outside on the cement, no knee or back pain. And it's been that way ever since. And that it's the foundation of my gym, and it's the foundation of all my training I do now.
So you said Roger was his name. What's the name of the system again? And is there a place that viewers can find any more information about that?
Right. So we practice, it's Aishin's Yoga. I and then Shin. It's pronounced I-Shin, Aishin's Yoga. And it's on our website. If you go to monkeybargym.com, we put a beginner sequence on there that gives you just a great baseline to get your body more balanced. Then we gave a partner feedback sequence, which, like, if Joel, if you and I were working together, you would do a pose and then I would give you partner feedback so I can get you to activate weaker links better. And so it improves each pose by about 30%. So that's the second part to it. And then we have a warrior sequence, which is for more intense yoga training, and that's for a big time. It's great for athletes, but it's great for everybody as well. So we have 3 Aishin's Yoga sequences on our website, but and that's all part of our online membership. But we also have what we call BASE, Building Alignment, Stability, and Extension. And that is Aishin's Yoga, plus we threw in various brachiation and mobility drills that I've used as well over the years that I really like. And we blend those in with the Aishin's Yoga. And it's a little faster pace so that for athletes and folks that have a little attention deficit disorder, they'll be able to do the BASE sequence with a lot more ease than they might do an Aishin's Yoga sequence, because generally yoga takes a lot of patience and you got to sit and hold poses and focus on your breathing for a long time. And the BASE sequence is timed in a manner that you know how long each pose is going to be, and everything is guided, and it's very simplistic to follow, but you reap incredible benefits as well. So that's all on our website. It's all part of our online membership, and we're adding to our online membership all the time with more sequences and more videos on how to do every single exercise and pose.
That's cool. So the Aishin Yoga, I'm assuming those holds that are very short, like they're not static, they're just a few seconds in length?
Well, no. You hold them, you might hold them for 30, 40 seconds, but you're engaged. They're not static in that most of the people, when they do a pose called Front Warrior, which is basically a lunge with hands overhead, most of the people, when they hear, oh, I got to hold it, they just hang in the pose. So what that does is that causes the muscles that are preventing you to just drop all the way to the ground to engage. And that's not what you want. Your hip flexors will engage and your thigh will engage to prevent you from just collapsing to the ground. But what we try and do is we try and actively shorten the hamstrings and thus open the hip flexors. So if you're engaged in extension while you're doing that movement, then through reciprocal inhibition, your hip flexors turn off, and that creates openness in your hips. But we've done this for so long, so we know how to engage a person so that you can create openness in your hips and thus relieve knee and back pain. But then we also put a huge focus on your alignment while you're doing it. So it's not just, you know, you're just doing it and you turn on one muscle and the other one relaxes, then all of a sudden your alignment's great. There's a lot of alignment talk while you're doing those engagements. So you reap huge benefit in alignment, and then you create more balance in your joints. And those are the things that you want as an athlete, to feel lighter and freer. And once you get that, then your performance is going to greatly improve.
Okay. Oh, cool. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I like that description there. And yeah, I'm not a big fan of the just passive static stretching holds at all.
No, not at all.
So last question I have for you is, so you mentioned you do that barbell training is a component of your system, just not a big component. What's the scope that you do use the barbell training with athletes?
Well, I don't use a barbell. We use kettlebells for our regular members and for our athletes. It's just, especially for basketball players, I've always felt like Olympic bar is just biomechanically, it's not a easy one for taller basketball players to use. Kettlebells work really well, and you can do all the same movements with kettlebells. You can do overhead squats, and it's going to work to stabilize the shoulders way better than a bar where you lock the shoulder blades in. And I prefer kettlebells over a lot of the things. The only ones that I was finding that were difficult to load in a manner that was equal or similar to a barbell was deadlifts. And so we do here at my monkey bar gym here and then at most other monkey bar gyms is we just take a piece of pipe, run it through kettlebells, and then you can load it up the exact same. Plus, you have a slightly unstable lift, which is even better. And we work our deadlifts like that, cleans and snatches. You can, most guys, if you can go up to a double 48 cleans, and if you can snatch 40s, you're pretty freaking strong, dude. And we can always make those harder by diminishing the amount of range of the movement of the from the ground. So those can always be made harder. So we really feel like we've covered all our bases with the heavy, like Olympic type lifts or just strength grind type lifts with kettlebells. We feel good. And then we use D balls a lot. We integrate cables and body weight training. So what we do is we try and get them adapted to all variables of training for fitness or performance. And it works really great. Very low incidence of injuries, very high levels of performance.
Yeah, I always like the idea of doing more with less weight, finding ways to make less weight a little bit harder for athletes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, that
makes sense.
The pipe kettlebell, the pipe deadlift is interesting, and I guess I didn't think about it initially, but yeah, there is that slight instability, and I like that because I think that a lot of trainers go into stability overload and thought and like, you know, making things really unstable, but just that little bit. It's just that subtle bit seems like it could be really beneficial for an athlete's nervous system just within the movement variability.
Yeah, and it's not much, but it definitely keeps you really focused on getting the stuff right when you make that initial lift, because your hands are off center, if the bells swing, you know, it's slightly unstable. So we do a ton of technique work here on it, but I love the deadlift. I think it's just such a simple, full-body, great exercise. And if you dial it in, it's safe exercise. I think a lot of people just don't know how to do deadlifts properly, and it's just sad. It's a great exercise.
Yeah, deadlifts are that was my first big exercise I incorporated back in the day when I was kind of on my quest for a better vertical jump. I didn't understand squats till a few more years down the road till I had someone really instruct me in it. But the deadlift always came naturally.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool.
All right, awesome, John. Well, hey, that's the end of the time I have for the show today, but I really appreciate you being on and sharing your wealth of experience and information with us all today. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Joe. I hope it was helpful for your listeners and you, and I appreciate talking with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay, buddy. Have a great day.
Thanks for tuning in today, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it, and if you did, please leave a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever you're listening to this podcast on. We'll be back next week with Dr. Mike Young, PhD, and we're just going to be talking about speed training, great speed discussion, cueing, motor learning, strength, research back in a lot of concepts, and it's going to be a great show. I think you guys are going to like it. Also, don't forget to visit our sponsor, simplyfaster.com, suppliers of high-end speed training technology, making the world of being fast a better place. So if you're looking at some great tools and toys that'll help you get the job done, check them out at simplyfaster.com. We'll see you guys next week.